So the tradition of Noah was binding on his offspring only up to a point. And you can realize why such a tradition can never go on eternally, because it will only be carried down for a few generations. But the event at Sinai, which was done in front of the entire people, recorded by Moses, a system of Torah set up, the scholars were placed in charge, that is the only kind of event that could be binding on every human being. That's the reason why Sinai is where everything stems from, a belief in Sinai. Okay? And that's why the system actually starts from Sinai. But the difference between the two positions, the position that David mentioned and the position of the Talmud, would be the question of this particular law. Is the Ben Noah obligated to have children? Is the Ben Noah such an obligation? Now, according to the Talmudic view, the Ben Noah is not under such an obligation. Okay, because at Sinai, when the seven mitzvot were framed, that was not framed as one of them. Okay, now I'm going to digress just for a second, because Tosfos asks a very interesting question. Tosfos' question is, how do we know that the Ben Noah is not obligated to have children? Okay, that's Tosfos' question. Why don't we say on the contrary, since the Torah does say, be fruitful and multiply, what source do we have to contradict that verse and to say that no, that was only given up till the time of the Torah? But once Sinai took place, then the B'nai Israel were given that responsibility, and B'nai Noah were relieved from that responsibility. Tosfos asks, he says, how do we know that? What's the source? So Tosfos says that maybe you will say, because we know from the oral law that there are only seven commandments. And since there are only seven, this would make it eight. And therefore, the oral law, without which we can't interpret the Torah, the oral law stands very fast by the principle that there are only seven. And it must be that eighth was simply abrogated. So Tosfos says that wouldn't be a proof, actually. He says, why? Because when we say seven laws, we only mean seven negative laws. The number seven was only the authentic tradition that we have from Sinai is that seven is with regard to the negative prohibitions. Of course, it's positive, but it's in order to keep the negative. So that's not considered as an intrinsically positive commandment. But, so Tosfos says, perhaps there was another positive commandment. And that doesn't come into that number seven of the tradition, of the oral law. So Tosfos gives an interesting answer. He says no, because he says the law with regard to reproduction also involves a negative. And he says, and he explains it, he says, because only those who are obligated, in other words, there is a violation, onanism. You're familiar with the term onanism, which is the story in the Bible of Er and Onan, and where they spilled their seed and they didn't wish to procreate. And then it says that God. So they were under the obligation to be fruitful and multiply. That's why they were deserving of death. But Tosfos says that it is ipso facto. In other words, if you're obligated to reproduce, then you're also prohibited, is a prohibition of spilling the seed, okay, which would mean masturbation. So Tosfos says, now if, in fact, the Ben Noah were obligated to reproduce, then he would have an eighth law which he couldn't violate. In other words, an eighth negative law, which would mean that he would be prohibited to spill the seed. And he says, but in fact, that we know, that there are only seven negatives, and there is no eighth. So therefore, he says, we must conclude from the oral tradition, the law of being fruitful and multiplying was only the Ben Noah up to the giving of the Torah, but at that point, they were relieved from the obligation, and the obligation was placed upon the Ben Israel. Okay, that's Tosfos. I'm giving you the Tosafist proof for this fact. Okay. Now, by the way, it shows you what the prohibition of spilling the seed is really not like many people think, that it has to do with like killing someone. I mean, people always say that. But according to halacha, the halacha has a very specific concept behind it. The Tosafists state that the reason for the prohibition against masturbation is simply because of the obligation to procreate. In other words, the prohibition against spilling the seed is that if one has an obligation to procreate, he's not permitted to divert the instinct into the realm of fantasy, because if the person should do that, then they will be removing themselves from the obligation to procreate. So the prohibition against spilling the seed is based upon the obligation to procreate. And since there are only seven prohibitions, not eight, so therefore we must assume that the obligation of being fruitful and multiplying is not an obligation to the Ben Noach. Now, what we should try to understand is, it seems we have to, let's just try to understand what we have here. What we have here, according to the oral tradition, is that the B'nai Noach were obligated in this commandment of reproduction until the time. Then they were relieved of that obligation, and it was given to B'nai Israel. Now, why the change? Okay, I mean, we like to understand. Sometimes we can't understand. We say we don't always understand God's laws, but we're obligated to try to understand them. And what sense does it make that why the change? In other words, why were they relieved and why were they obligated? And it seems they were not obligated until the time of Noah. Okay, that's another thing. It doesn't say the with regard to Adam, it says be fruitful and multiply, but that was a blessing, and a blessing is not an obligation, as we stated earlier. So the answer is that from the moment God entered into a covenant with man, okay, the moment God entered into a covenant with man, man had to accept upon himself the obligation to procreate, because that is considered a fulfillment of the will of God, that the species should continue. So the moment God entered into a covenant with man, it became mandatory, necessary, that there should be an obligation on the part of man to fulfill God's will and to procreate. Now, before the Torah was given, there was only one group which had the covenant with God, and that was the Bnei Noach. So therefore, the only way this commandment could exist would be in the framework of the entire human race. Now, once Sinai came into existence, again, there's the covenant between God and man, but in the covenant between God and man, there must be some group, at least, that accepts the obligation to use. So then, the commandment could be fulfilled through the B'nai Israel on a mandatory basis, and of course, through a Ben Noah on a voluntary basis. But the commandment would be in existence with man. And in order to have a covenant between God and man, this is necessary. This much is necessary, that man accept upon himself the obligation to make sure that the species continue. But the obligation doesn't have to be on all of mankind. It must be at least on a part of mankind on a mandatory basis, and on all of mankind on a voluntary basis. That suffices to have a covenant between God and man. But before that, when there was only one group, then it had to be mandatory on all of mankind, because you couldn't simply single out and say, well, this group's going to do it, that group. There was only one category, the category of B'nai Noach, and everyone came under one heading, the one grouping. So therefore, it was mandatory for everyone to accept upon themselves the responsibility insofar as making sure, ensuring the survival of the species. But once the Sinai came into play, it wasn't necessary to have everyone saddled with the responsibility. As long as a group exists that will ensure that the species continues, that is enough to satisfy the requirement for God having a covenant between man and between himself. So it wasn't necessary to burden the entire world with that responsibility.
Rabbi?
As long as one group has responsibility enough, and as I said, the rest of the world could always fulfill it on a voluntary basis.
Rabbi?
Okay. Yes.
All right. This opens up another question in regard to, if we're not commanded, if the prohibition is specifically for Israel, and it's not for the Ben Noach, and since the Ben Noach is to establish course to justice and maintain social order, all right, what about in countries, in areas where people have more children than they can feed and they starve to death, would the Ben Noach, if he had the opportunity, would it be his responsibility to teach them birth control and to teach them how to control their environment so that they could feed the people they have?
That's a now you're hitting me with a rough one. Okay, I mean.
Now, see, we have in America, we have places where children are actually starving.
Correct.
Because they're just, you know, women are just having kid after kid after kid. Then there's countries around the world. So that would it be our obligation in the area of morals, ethics, and domestic tranquility promoting the Sheva Mitzvah, should we do what I mentioned before?
Now, let me answer that question in a very careful manner. Let me put it this way. There is certainly nothing wrong, as you can see, according to the Torah, for the Ben Noach to practice even total birth control. Okay? Even total birth control. There's no prohibition against the for Ben Noach to do that. Now your question is, should you teach these people, or are we obligated to teach these people birth control? Okay, that's a different question. Can they is one question.
All right, but the question would be practical. If they were taking care of their families, feeding them, educating them, etc., I don't think there would be a problem. But the problem comes with when you have more population than the land can support.
Yes, it would seem rational. What you're saying would seem to be rational, but I would say that the first obligation that we have to these people is to teach them the correct way of the Torah. Now, in other words, the correct way of life, because obviously this is not their sole problem. The problem is they are not living by any kind of correct ethical standard. To begin with, and someone could say, well, let's say people wanted on a voluntary basis to do this commandment, are we to say that they aren't supposed to do this commandment? They aren't supposed to fulfill this commandment. Well, one might be able to argue and say, if we taught them the ideas of Torah, and we taught them how to live properly according to Torah, even if they were in a situation where, let us say they are in a situation where the land is fixed and they simply can't survive somehow. So perhaps they should simply be involved in reproduction according to the commandment, which is simply a male and a female. In other words, to make sure that the species survives and not a total wipeout of the nation, which is what would happen if you practice total birth control. So it would be possible, really, even in a situation of dire stress, get something where...
Rabbi,
yes.
I have a point to make right there. See, in China, they have this same problem, and the government has passed a law that you only have one child, maybe one child.
Right.
All right, so what these people are doing, in order, the male is seen so superior to the female, and the female is in a very inferior role, that there are literally millions of babies killed every year, females, so the mother can keep having kids till she has a male. Now, all right, now, that would go against it. Now,
that's why I'm saying that their whole ethical system is corrupt.
All right, well, that's the point I made to start with,
right,
that we've got to teach them the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach.
Right.
But the person that's hungry is not concerned with morals and ethics. They're concerned with food.
Well,
and so you have to start somewhere, and I think... you know, I think that you start with justice and you teach people the morals and ethics of justice, and then you bring the other aspects in. That's the point that I'm making, that
well,
you can't abrogate. You've got to start somewhere.
Right. Well,
where do you start?
Okay. In my opinion, if you'd ask me, what is the philosophy of Torah, where do you start? Do I start by stopping this starvation and satisfying the people in a physical way first, and then introduce the seven laws? Or do I say, no, the reverse? Let's take all the people we have and introduce them to the knowledge and way of life of Torah, and then naturally they will be able to get out of their problem. In my opinion, I think actually there is a verse in the Torah to this question directly, okay? And I always like to cite the Torah. The Torah states in the in Genesis, you have the story of Esau and Jacob. Okay. Now Esau, as you know, and that is in, this will give you the text over here. It's in Genesis 25. Okay. Now you know the story where Esau was a man of the field and Jacob was a man of the tent. He was a person that studied, learned, he stayed at home, and Esau was the hunter. And it says one day, and that's in 25:29, Jacob was cooking a bean stew, and Esau came from the field, and he was exhausted. Of course, you know, the Torah speaks, as you know, very very short and very terse, very tersely. So the Torah says he was exhausted. Obviously, that day he was... he was frustrated. He went out, and the Talmud says that he was engaged in some violations. He was that was the day that Abraham passed away, and he was ethically he became corrupt. But that's aside from the point. The point is that he came back. He was frustrated, exhausted, hungry, tired. He was an unsuccessful hunter that day. Okay. Now, then it says, Esau said to Jacob, give me some of that red stuff that you're cooking because I'm exhausted. And that's where he got his name, Edom, all right? And then Jacob responded and said, sell me your birthright, okay? Now, of course, you know what the birthright was. The birthright was the one who was in the time before the Torah, there was the oldest son was the one that had the responsibility like a Kohen, like a priest. He came to bring sacrifices. He was the one that was in charge. He would instruct them about the true idea of what a sacrifice is, the true idea of God, and what's about to take place. And he would help them to, you know, in order to perform their obligations in general and with regard to sacrifices in specific. So the firstborn acted in those days like a priest. Okay, in the time of the temple. That was under the system of the B'nai Noach. Now, Jacob felt bad because he felt that a man like Esau shouldn't really be assuming that position because he was not a righteous man. And although he wasn't overtly evil, as we see from the Torah, ostensibly he made a good appearance, but in fact his heart wasn't in it. So Jacob, to assume that role, take it away from Esau. I felt it wasn't proper for Esau to have that role. So he figured this is a good opportunity. Esau is exhausted. He wants food. He wants to eat. So, okay, fine, but give me the birthright. And I'll switch places with you. From now on, when people come, they'll come to me. I will help them in the performance of their mitzvot. Okay? So now look at Esau's response. Esau gives an unusual response in verse 32. It says, "And Esau said, Behold, I am going to die, and what do I need the birthright for?" Now, what does that mean? I mean, everybody's going to die, so what did Esau mean? Of course, we're all going to die. What's it got to do with the birthright? What he meant to say was this, that I am a man of the material. The birthright is a very nice thing to have. It's a nice thing to have the birthright when my belly is full and when I have my clothes on my back, when I have all my needs, then it's nice to have the religious aspect and to be the one that's in charge and act like the priest. It's a very nice thing. Enjoy it. But what comes first, my friend, is not that. It's necessity. These are the things that come first. I'm about to die. He exaggerated, of course. I'm exhausted. I feel like I'm dying. And you're talking to me about birthrights. I mean, I'm hungry now. Let's speak about first things first. The first things are necessities, food, all the things that a human being needs. Then we could talk about luxuries. To Esau, functioning in the religious capacity was a nice luxury. He enjoyed it, but it's still a luxury. What comes first is man's basic needs and necessities. So that was the philosophy of Esau. And as you know, the Bible states that he sold the birthright, and right in the next verse afterwards, it says, and Jacob gave to Esau bread and the dish that he had, and he ate and he drank and he went, and then it says, and Esau degraded the birthright. Okay, why was it a degradation? It was a degradation because the righteous person places his ethical needs first. They're primary. Esau placed them secondarily. He said, when I'm hungry, don't talk to me about birthrights. It's very nice to be religious and to keep God's laws. It's a wonderful thing, but first we need the physical things. That's a degradation of Torah. That's a degradation of God's laws. God's laws are primary. They're first. They're not secondary. So my recommendation would be, if you want to reach these people, reach them with God's laws. That's primary. It's not going to work if you're going to try to reach them through their bellies. In other words, first we'll satisfy their physical needs. Then we'll go and we'll talk to them about the seven laws. I don't think it works that way. It might work that way on a superficial way. In other words, of course, if you're going to talk to a person, Abram set up a tent and he'd take the people in and he'd feed them and he'd talk to them about God. Yes, that is true. In terms of a personal interview, you're talking to a person, you try to win them over at the time, and you take care of their needs. That's correct. But when you're speaking in general, the first thing has to be the ethics. So if you want to reach people, you really should primarily try to reach them through their souls. I mean, that's the most important thing. To try to take care of their problems. In other words, what I'm saying is the birth control problem cannot be isolated as a single problem away from the rest of the ethical system. I don't think we'll have success if we do it that way. I think we'll have success if we go in with a whole system and teach them the way of living and the correct way of living according to knowledge. Then we'll be able to take care of that problem as well.
Rabbi?
But isolated, I think, is not the proper approach.
All right, the point that I would make is that, again, we are in agreement, just a slight variance, that you have taught us and the other rabbis have taught us that we take people where they are,
mm-hmm.
and then we lead them into the Torah, the depths of Torah. So I would say, yes, we are teaching them morals and ethics, and we're explaining to them the reason we are teaching and for instance, on the birth control issue, the reason we are teaching you this is, and then we go back and we would quote Torah principles, morals, and ethics based on pure monotheism.
Okay.
And most of these people that...
Well, you can give them food also the same manner. I mean,
sure.
You don't have to teach them birth control. I don't think it's the ultimate vehicle for...
Right. Well, I'm just saying that's one of the problems. These people are, and I'll do specifically with China, these people are committing murder.
Absolutely.
All right, so we need to tell them, well, this is wrong. Now, what are they going to do? China's got how many, 200 and, or 350 million people, have a billion by the year 20-something?
That's right.
And, you know, they've got real problems there.
agree with you on that one. I mean, if you went to these people, if they were interested in our advice, I mean, of course.
Sure.
But let's say they were interested in our advice, and we told them, we said, look, what you're doing is murder. You're in serious violation of God's law. What you can do is simply not reproduce. That is not in violation of God's law, and that would be fine. To do it in such a manner would be appropriate. But I wouldn't say that ultimately we should try to teach them to never procreate, because it still is a voluntary commandment to make sure that the species survives. And if everybody's going to practice birth control, then the species is going to be wiped out. And I think we should allow them to realize that on a voluntary basis, they should be capable of performing the commandment. But I certainly, you're correct that we should tell them that what they're doing at this point is completely wrong, and they should really rather refrain from murder and refrain from having children. Then they would not be in violation of any of the seven laws of Noah. That would be appropriate. That I agree with you on that. Okay? So, at any rate, but of course, you understand, David, that now you're agreeing that you go to Sinai and not from Noah, because if you go from Noah, then you can't teach this, because then they'd be obligated to procreate and you wouldn't be able to practice birth control. Okay? So what your last argument kind of, goes against the first argument. But I'm just, I know you presented it as a possibility. I'm just, to clear up the issue by this example. Okay? Are there any questions on the subject that we just discussed tonight?
All right, I'll make some closing comments from my standpoint.
Okay.
That, see, in the area, and I don't want to just belabor the point of birth control, because that's not the issue. We could deal with any issue.
Okay.
But, see, any time that you're dealing with men, that you talk about the voluntary aspect of it, now we have statistics to prove this, that among educated and intellectual people, when the world began to become overpopulated, the intellectual, sophisticated people did voluntarily cut back on the birth of children, but those that were not sophisticated and educated continued to procreate.
Right.
Now, by the year 2050, in America, white people will be a minority. And this in direct proportion to birth control among the whites. Now, these are facts, not fantasy. So you have to, it's not just enough to educate one group. We must educate everyone in every aspect and every facet of Torah.
I agree with
as you. The opportunity gives. And Don just said, we're out of time.
Okay.
So for one chance, I'm going to get the final word unless you jump back in.
No, I agree with you.
Okay, well, we'll begin here next week.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.